Case number 13-1155, Louisiana Public Service Commission Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Fotham for the petitioner, Ms. Kafer for the respondent, Mr. Moot for the interveners.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Mike Fotham. I represent the Louisiana Public Service Commission. In this case, the court remanded to FERC to explain why it could not grant refunds under the Regulatory Fairness Act or would not grant refunds under the Regulatory Fairness Act. In response, FERC has determined finally, and there's no appeal of this, that it can, that the holding company will suffer no undercollections in retail rates if it grants refunds and surcharges. After three times saying that it needed to grant refunds because its policy requires refunds, because consumers were harmed, and because unjust and unreasonable rates were charged from one company to another, FERC suddenly changed its mind, denied refunds, gave no weight whatsoever to consumer harm, and relied on two absolutely vacant and baseless so-called factors, which are not factors at all, in the refund decision.
Do you have any FERC cases in which it orders refunds and there has neither been over-recovery nor a violation of the filed rate doctrine?
Well, Your Honor, I think we cited eight holding company cases.
You cite a lot of cases where there's language which, from my point of view, muddies the waters, but there are cases where...
There's been five in the last 7 years, Your Honor, where in energy cases, it's a different tariff. It's the bandwidth tariff. All the payments and receipts cancel out. The payments and receipts go from one company to another. The holding company never collects a dime under any of these tariffs. They're cost allocation tariffs. So the holding company doesn't have a rate. It doesn't have a charge. In all of those cases, FERC has granted refunds. And no one even claimed that there was a policy against refunds. That's the amazing thing. This is a so-called, precedent that has been imported into this case, made out of whole cloth. There's absolutely no basis to it. We also, Your Honor, we cited the 1982 Middle South Utilities case. Middle South was the predecessor to Energy. No overcollection. The court granted refunds. There's the Blue Ridge Power case, where FERC specifically interpreted the Regulatory Fairness Act. Somebody was the opposing parties were arguing, well, all of these payments and receipts cancel out. The holding company doesn't collect anything. FERC said in that case, we are hard-pressed to believe that Congress intended for us to allow some ratepayers to overpay, other ratepayers to over-receive or underpay, when it passed the Regulatory Fairness Act. There are all kinds of cases where the holding company did not over-collect. In fact, I'll say this, Your Honor, there has never been a reported case that we can find, nor is there a reported case that any party has cited here where FERC did find rates unjust and unreasonable in a holding company case and denied refunds.
Can I ask you about the different generations of ratepayers argument that was mentioned in the footnote of the order and it's mentioned in passing in the FERC's brief? Why isn't that a substantial basis for their decision?
Well, I don't think they relied on it. They mentioned it in a footnote, but they did not say that that's what we're relying on. And they couldn't because they had rejected it. In the third remand order, they specifically brought that issue up. It was being argued by my opponents. And they said, we do not view the passage of time as a factor in this case.
But just like they kind of reversed other aspects of the third order, didn't they, in effect, reverse that?
Well, possibly they, if they had a good reason and if they explained it. But this was a footnote that said, we've had other cases that denied refunds, and then they listed some examples. It wasn't reliance at all.
I thought the footnote said that there were other equitable factors that we considered.
I don't believe so.
It said these are not the only equitable considerations that the commission has examined.
In the
past. And then it cites, I guess, three different cases, including one involving different generations of ratepayers.
That's true, Your Honor. I read that, and I don't think a contrary claim, well, maybe it has, but there was no indication in the FERC's actual decision of reliance on that factor. And I'd like to point this out, too. It would go against this court's precedent to say that's a factor when FERC committed legal error. We've had two reversals because FERC was arbitrary and capricious. Louisiana was delayed in relief. We filed in 1995. This is 19 years later. In 1995, we filed. FERC dismissed the case. This court, Judge Garland was the writing judge, ruled that that was quintessentially arbitrary and capricious. Case went back to FERC. 5 years later, FERC says, okay, it is unjust and unreasonable. That was 9 years after we filed the complaint. You cannot rely on passage of time when legal error brings about the passage of time. And you know, in any rate case, Your Honor, I mean, if that were a basis, then in any rate case, you could never grant refunds because the customers always change. You know, I mean, in 10 minutes, the customers change somewhat. So if they wanted to pick that up and rely on it, they'd have to explain why legal error did not matter, and they would have to explain why they're now saying something different than they said in the third order, which they did not do. So I don't believe that's a factor. I think that it's important for the court. I mean, if you want to say, well, okay, there weren't two factors that they relied on. Those are both arbitrary, unjust, and unreasonable. Let's go look in the footnote and find some other factor. But all of their factors have to be at least non-arbitrary. That there would be possibly one unexplained factor that, you know, the court could think maybe that would justify it. Well, that's not sufficient. I think the rule in this court is if you rely on two, three factors, then, you know, they all have to be reasonable or rational. So
so the agency says, basically, we have these two lines of authority.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
And we treat energy and all of the operating companies as a single entity.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so we've divided the world into two parts. And in this case, we looked at, was there any reason in this case not to stick with our general rule that in cost allocation cases, we're not going to grant refunds? What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, what's wrong with it is it's a departure from policy. The policy was rate design cases. In rate design cases, the utility has a rate, like a ratchet, that gives a price signal to customers. And in those cases, because the rate design sometimes would be changed by FERC without notice, we had notice here. Sometimes the rate design would be changed without notice. There might be an undercollection. FERC took that so-called policy where there's an undercollection and said, well, we're now going to apply it in the holding company context where the holding company has no rate.
Right.
The holding company never collects a dime. There's no price signal for the holding company.
All right. I get your point that you're saying the factual situation here is different than in the prior cost allocation cases. And my question is, FERC says, maybe so, but we've looked at our divided world, and we don't find any reason to apply a different rule in these factual circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think then you say, okay, well, first of all, they have applied a different rule. In every other holding company case they've ever decided where they found the rate unjust and unreasonable, they gave a refund. They're all laid out in our brief, and there are, I think, you know, there are five bandwidth errors. We just filed.
The important thing is for you to show that there are cases without or over covered with that happens. And I'm just looking at the bandwidth order, which you just relied on, where there are firm assertions that there was over-recovery.
Well, Your Honor, there's over-recovery in this case. Energy Louisiana overpaid. The other companies underpaid. Those companies over-recovered. What FERC is saying is that the holding company, the parent, did not over-recover. The holding company never recovers a dime. This podium didn't over-recover either.
Right.
If you don't have a rate, you cannot over-recover. Saying that someone who doesn't recover anything didn't over-recover is a completely vacant statement. Your Honor, in all those cases, the holding company did not over-recover. Some of the operating companies over-recover. All of the payments under the system agreement cancel out. A payment is made, a receipt is received. The two cancel out from the holding company perspective. It's a zero-sum game under the bandwidth tariff. It's a zero-sum game under this tariff. The over-recoveries are by the companies that charge the rates. And when we look at the companies that charge the rates, there's an over-recovery in every case of an unjust and unreasonable rate.
So
in
your position that there's some legal error then to, I guess, get back to Judge Rogers' question, that there's some legal error in FERC looking at the world the way that it did, solely from the perspective of the holding company as opposed to the perspective of the separate operating companies?
Yes, Your Honor. The legal error is they've departed from precedent and policy. They admit the policy evolved. You know, it evolved in a massive jump on the scale of evolution between third order. We have an absolute policy to grant refunds for unjust and unreasonable rates. That's what's in the Federal Power Act. That's what we're supposed to do. To fourth and fifth order, they say it. Consumer harm doesn't matter a bit. If a consumer is harmed, the Regulatory Fairness Act does not care. And that's what the court is supposed to hold, because FERC gave no weight in the balancing of the equities to consumer harm. None. In a one-liner, it dismissed it. It said just because there's consumer harm doesn't mean we have to grant a refund.
Let me ask you a question that it's raised in intervener's brief only, so far as I could see it. Is this notion about credits being received by the operating companies under the system agreement, and therefore the consumer harm doesn't exist in effect?
No, Your Honor. What they're saying is it was the consumers who paid.
Yes.
Therefore, the company didn't have a windfall. What happens is they get a cost assigned to them. They pass it right through to the consumers because supremacy clause requires that. So, well, the consumers paid, so you had some consumers who were better off, some consumers who were worse off, which is undue discrimination.
Here's what the interveners say. They say the credits received by the operating company under the system agreement, allocations are reflected in the retail rates so that there's no windfall.
Well, Your Honor, that's the whole point. That's
I don't mean no windfall by energy. I mean by the operating company.
No, they're saying there's no windfall of only an operating company. And what they're saying is that some of the consumers overpaid, some of the consumers underpaid.
Right.
That shouldn't matter. That's what they're saying. Because it canceled out, which is the exact argument that was made in Blue Ridge Power, which we cite in our reply brief. And the FERC rejected that and said that can't possibly be right. But that's what they're asking you to do. And, you know, this is a situation where really you got a holding company, it has no rates. You have operating companies that charge rates to each other. This court has always been concerned about, you know, are they getting the correct costs assigned to them, which is what FERC was always cared about until about 2 years ago as well. And if the costs are unjust and unreasonable assigned to those operating companies, then that means an unjust and unreasonable cost is going to be flowed through to a consumer in one jurisdiction, and an unjust and unreasonable too low cost will be flowed through to a consumer in another jurisdiction. Well, from the holding company's perspective, it doesn't care. It's a zero-sum game. This podium doesn't care. The bench doesn't care. You know, a man on the street doesn't care. But it's very important to the consumers.
And with respect to the question, the second point relied on by FERC as a special consideration, which was the question of whether there'd be a change in consumer conduct as a result of a different price, you say that it didn't point to any change in conduct, but why wouldn't we, unless there's some reason to think that the consumers are completely price inelastic, that there would have been some change?
Well, Your Honor, this is the point. The consumer conduct history that FERC was worried about was in the context of ratchets and similar special rate price signals. So if you had a rate that would bill you on your demand at a certain hour of the month, you might try to avoid having a demand at that hour of the month. You might try to have your demand at other hours. That's a price signal. In this case, you have a cost. It goes to the retail operating company. That company distributes its cost through rates on a completely different basis than FERC does. In other words, the price signal...
Why don't we have to assume that those ultimate consumers changed their conduct as a result of the prices or took the prices into account in their consumption decisions?
Well, you mean the Louisiana consumer had too high a rate and therefore...
Let's not talk about too high, let's talk about higher and lower. Isn't it correct to assume that those faced with a higher rate compared to some alternative consume less?
Your Honor,
vice versa.
FERC rejected this. There was evidence in the record that said the price signals do not affect consumer conduct. The tariff price signals do not affect consumer conduct. It was never rebutted. This argument that, oh, gee whiz, there's a demand curve. Well, if that argument works, then there's never going to be a remedy for an unjust and unreasonable rate ever.
No, I mean, you're putting aside the cases of over-recovery, right?
Your Honor, there were over-recoveries here. This court held that. This court held that Louisiana consumers paid too much.
I understand that. But no over-recovery by the holding company.
There was no over-recovery by the holding company, which has no rate and couldn't have over-recovered under any conceivable circumstances, no matter what. Yes, sir, that's true.
All right. So, why don't we hear from...
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Respondent.
Good morning, Holly Kafer for the Commission.
Good morning.
Perhaps I should start where we left off, which is the fact that there was no over-recovery by the holding company. The Commission, while it arrived at this understanding rather late in the proceeding, was bound by the Southern Company AEP, American Electric Power, precedent that looks to the holding company, as well as the Commission's own orders, and this court's own orders, which look to the energy system as a whole. So it was reasonable for the Commission to look to the system as a whole again in this case.
But in the Southern Company and AEP cases, there were no findings of unjust and unreasonable rates, correct?
That's true. This particular case before the court today does not perfectly align with any other case that this court or the Commission has heard. Taken together, looking at the holding company cases, looking at the cost allocation cases where the Commission has invoked this precedent of denying refunds, the Commission found that this case, with its relatively unique facts, fit best in that category, the Southern Company category, if you will.
So it said, well, the holding company had made decisions.
Right. The holding company had made decisions that it could not undo. The operating companies had made decisions that they could not undo. Of course, the operating companies, of course, the consumers would respond to different price signals.
So the Louisiana Commission had expert testimony basically saying, refunds happen all the time. and that no decision was ever identified to support this one factor that FERC did identify in its opinion.
If I understand correctly, you're referring to the factor that the utility and the consumers cannot revisit operating conditions?
FERC, in its last order, says energy can't revisit its decisions.
Right. And
we don't know what decisions the agency is talking about. It doesn't identify them. Is that correct?
It does not list specifically the types of measures that Entergy and the operating companies could have taken to essentially shave their peak load. That's what's at issue here. The removal of interruptible load from, as it happens, the Louisiana operating companies' allocation of peak load responsibility necessarily increased the share of peak load responsibility allocated to the non-Louisiana operating companies, mm-hmm. and increased their overall capacity costs. There are any number of things that those operating companies could have done if they had been presented with that price signal to reduce their overall peak load. So we're not talking about, because we're talking about peak load very generally and not one particular type of service more specifically, there are any number of things they could have done. The Commission invokes Occidental in the fifth order, and Occidental notes in footnote 3 there that, for instance, and it was the same issue there, interruptible load, the utility there could have used a load response program, and Entergy could have done the same thing here.
So I'm referring, just so you're clear, to paragraph 63 of the fifth order. This is after FERC has said, we see no reason not to lump this case with those other cost allocation cases we've decided. And then it says, in addition, we find the danger of under-recovery is not present. An equitable ground disfavoring refunds in this context is the fact that Entergy cannot review and revisit past decisions were we to order refunds. And then there's the footnote that Judge Wilkins referred to in talking with Petitioner's
right.
counsel.
Right. Footnote 142, which...
About customers. So
exactly.
That's the only thing we have to go on, correct?
As far as the
equitable considerations, the only one FERC thought was worthy of mentioning in its order per se is Entergy cannot review and revisit past decisions.
That is certainly a factor that the Commission relied upon.
What decisions?
The decision not to shave their peak load in response to an increase in their share of
peak load. You may be perfectly right, but how do I know that?
On background, the Commission discusses in each of the orders how interruptible load and the removal of interruptible load affects the allocation of peak load among the operating companies.
Which paragraph is that?
For instance, I think they repeat it in each order. For instance, JA 34, that's paragraph 4 of the fifth order. There's additional detail in each of the orders, and I believe there's also additional detail in the 2007.
So you're telling me if I read paragraph 4, I'll find these decisions?
There's not anywhere in the Commission's orders a specific listing of the
right.
types of measures
right.
that...
So we have no idea. I'm just saying. And under our town of Concord's and the other towns, we're supposed to be able to see that from the Commission's order that it balanced these considerations. So the Commission has said we have two lines of authority, we see no reason to depart, and there's some unidentified decisions that Entergy can't revisit. That's what we have here, isn't that correct?
What the court has here is the Commission's background discussion of how interruptible load affects the allocation of peak load responsibility among the operating companies. And I suppose that the Commission could have listed all the ways that an operating company could reduce their peak load. It didn't do that here, but what it did do was cite to Occidental, and that should be enough. In footnote 3 of the Occidental decision, the Commission identified load response programs as among the types of things that a utility could do in order to reduce their system peak. And that's the type of thing that Entergy could have done here as well. We think that the reference to Occidental is sufficient. That said, to address Your Honor's other point, operating conditions and the ability to change them is not the only equitable factor that the Commission relied upon here. The Commission did in footnote 41 of the fourth order, that's at JA 33, reference a series of cases that are part of the development of this precedent here. And if you look at paragraph...
you said JA 33?
JA 33 is where the footnote is. It's a bit awkward with the printing of the cases. The reference is to paragraph 23, where the Commission discusses the origin of this precedent where cost allocation cases...
I'm on JA 33. 33, and what footnote am I?
Footnote 41. It's just the listing of cases, and Commonwealth Edison, the last case listed in the footnote there, is particularly instructive. That is where the Commission held that the burden of a temporary rate disparity, which is what we have here, is outweighed by the harm of going through the refunds here, and that being the fact that the consumers who would then be forced to pay out the refunds ultimately... cannot revisit their past decisions.
So I just follow this. I'm looking at footnote 41, and you're saying if I look at the last case, Union Electric?
Commonwealth Edison, footnote 41?
Commonwealth Edison, if I look there?
Yes. And also Portland General Electric has a brief discussion as well. They both reference the fact that the Commission has found in the development of its precedent, which it is applying in this case, that the harm to consumers of a temporary rate disparity, because again, we're talking about 15 months here.
And I'm looking for the paragraph to which, here, paragraph 23 is where footnote 41 is. And that's talking about these two lines of precedent.
Exactly. The Commission is discussing the background of the development of the two lines of precedent.
Right.
And refers to these orders where that precedent was developed.
I mean, the way that I read orders 4 and 5 together, it's that the Commission basically threw up its hands and said, we're going to get sued either way. There's going to be a petition for review either way. You know, we went for refunds in order number 3, but now a rehearing petition has been filed, and it cites these line of cases, and we can't really distinguish them well enough, so we're going to just change our mind and order refunds. And then, so if we find that those cases can be distinguished, then shouldn't we reverse and remand?
What the Commission found was that those cases couldn't be persuasively distinguished. As I said earlier, the Commission acknowledges that this particular case, this unique case, doesn't fit precisely within precedent that's previously been before this Court or the Commission. But looking at Southern, which caused the Commission to look to whether there's an over-recovery by the holding company as a whole, the Commission found there's no over-recovery. Once you establish that, you look and see that, okay, this is a cost allocation case. In the fourth order, the Commission understood that it could not distinguish cost allocation from rate design cases, and the petitioner has offered nothing to distinguish those two types of cases. In fact, they're really one and the same. And in cost allocation cases, where there is no over-recovery by the holding company, the Commission generally does not grant refunds.
Could I take you back to paragraph 55? You lay out the question of whether under-recovery, the remedy, the proposed remedy would produce under-recovery. Put that aside. Then the other independent consideration is whether a different allocation would have resulted in a different decision by consumers at the Institute of Time and Facts for Developing. The question earlier was, why isn't that always the case? A different price would have produced different decisions. Are you saying that it's only a quite drastic difference in price based on timing? It has to be a question of interruptible versus firm service that is at stake, or what?
To precisely answer, this is not limited to interruptible versus firm service. And the commission in paragraph 55 notes that it would look at whether a different decision could be made by consumers or the utility. I would say that's likely to be true in most cases, but...
When's it not going to be true?
I suppose there could be... In our imperfect markets, there could be a case where a consumer is not able to respond to price signals. I think that's economic theory, and I don't have something to cite to you.
Has the commission ever discussed that? I mean, you are talking about a case where price elasticity is zero, and that's generally thought to be a rare instance.
Well, let's say this, that the consumer's ability to respond might be limited. The commission hasn't said whether it would be true in all cases. I'm not sure that argument has been made. And also, that wasn't an issue for the court in the Cities of Batavia case and the Second Taxing District Norwalk case, where the commission relied upon the same reasoning with the same extent of discussion.
What I'm asking about is what's going on in the mind of FERC, and what it appears to be doing is drawing a distinction or attaching significance to a consideration which it suggests can go one way or the other, but it would appear that it would always point one way, and therefore it's not a basis for deciding anything. Unless you're saying it's a question of degree, with interruptible versus firm service being the best example of a high degree of effect on consumer conduct.
Certainly here I think we are talking about a high degree of effect. I mean, I don't think that the amount at issue is insignificant anyway.
The amount of consumption affected by price.
Right. I'm sorry I'm not able to think of a case for you where, or a situation for you where the consumer wouldn't, where that wouldn't be true. That's not to say that the commission wouldn't be able to think of one.
All right, anything further?
I did want to note that the Blue Ridge case that petitioners cited it for the first time in their reply brief actually did involve a case where the utility was not charging the rate on file, so we think it's distinguishable for that reason.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Moot for the interveners. I'd like to start with Judge Rogers' question about the two factors, and as we've tried to hopefully somewhat informatively in our brief, we think the focus of petitioners on those two factors skips a step. The equitable threshold question that FERC has resolved in this line of cases, dividing cost allocation and rate design from over-recovery and violation of the filed rate, focuses on the behavior of a utility, not the behavior of the customers. And why does it do that? Several good reasons. First, that's the company that's regulated. Second, that's where the incentives fall. With over-recovery, as it's cited in the brief and in the Senate report, You've got an issue of incentives for delay or for filing too high rates with the filed rate. You've got an incentive to comply with the filed rate. On the other hand, in rate design and cost allocation cases, it's always a wash between customers. In cost allocation cases, it's two separate customer classes traditionally. In rate design, the purest rate design, it's within a class. It always comes to a wash. And if you think about town
even
of Concord,
where, even where there's an unjust rate.
Yeah, and this is Judge Wilkins' question. Refunds only arise when FERC has held that something is unjust and unreasonable or discriminatory.
Well,
that's the standard
here.
In
it
205,
here.
And it was applied in Southern. It was applied. It just wasn't a 206 case, Your Honor. Think about Town of Concord. What did it say about
so
what
it says we have to be clear that the agency balanced
absolutely
the equitable considerations.
Absolutely.
And from this order, how do we know that that was done where what FERC tells us is that there's no over-recovery, but
absolutely. I'd like to go back to the first step and what Town of Concord said about that. It said refunds are akin to restitution. Think about contract law. What does that mean? In contract law, the traditional remedy is compensation for the injured. That's direct damages or consequential. That looks, at, in our situation, the customer,
but
the
my
plaintiff.
Only point, but let me just be clear. Our questions, I think, are going to, has the agency adequately explained why right it has denied refunds? Not that it must grant refunds.
Fair enough.
All right?
I'd say two things. First is you start with the premise that we focus on whether the utility did anything wrong. So that is the basic equitable question under Town of Concord. That's what restitution is. Give back what you unjustly gained. Okay, then you go to the two factors. And I grant you that FERC has to give cogent analysis about those. But think about Judge Williams' question. Those two factors, if it was very rare that there would ever be a problem recovering the money, or very rare that there would ever be a usage decision, then arguably there should be a high hurdle of evidence on FERC, because it's the rare case where those two factors apply. And so you ought to have a big trial about it. But as Judge Williams' question suggests, at the margin, there's always an effect on usage. Arkansas could have looked at this decision and said, maybe we ought to step up our interruptible load program. And where does it send the agency if you set a high bar on that issue? Do they have to have a trial where they bring back retail customers or state commissions with affidavits about, yes, we would have changed our decisions? And does that have to be one customer, 20% of them, 50% of them? It's sending them down, and these cases will come back to you, a road that has no limiting principles.
You're depicting an approach seems straightforward, clear, reasonable, but not as well grounded in the FERC decision as one might hope, right? As Judge Rogers said, we're looking for whether there's an adequate explanation, and to me, your explanation would be adequate, but it's not what FERC said.
Two things very quickly. FERC started at paragraph 49 of the rehearing order that says our analysis begins with an assessment of the wrong intended to right. That's Town of Concord. There was no wrong on behalf of Entergy. You can stop there. With respect to what FERC has said, if you look implicitly in its decisions on this, it has not set a high bar on evidence. There is a generalized statement in most of the orders that changes in rates can affect usage. And that's a truism. And I don't think it's fair to hold FERC to a standard that it has to back that truism in every case. And most of the orders do not go into it in detail. One final point on bandwidth. This was addressed but in the 28J letters. Most of those cases are filed rate cases where Entergy had to comply with the filed rate. The others, refunds were not contested for reasons I won't bore you. They came out of the same cases. FERC said all refunds go into the same bucket in the same calculation. We have not contested it in that respect. And so FERC has never addressed this precise issue in those cases.
Before you sit down, sir, you represent Entergy, the holding company, correct?
It's probably technically right that Entergy Services, a service company that's at the
that's
provides
the name,
services to all the companies.
That's the name that's on the brief.
Entergy Corp.
Well, Entergy Services,
yes.
Inc.
Okay, good.
Is
right.
Who you're representing.
Yes.
So why are you here? What's your dog in this fight?
Because, as we noted in our brief, it's nice for FERC to say, and we appreciate it and we agree, that you're going to get your recovery, filed rate doctrine. But guess what we had to do? We had to sue Arkansas in federal court because they disagree. And Louisiana says, well, you know, supremacy clause, you get it. Well, are they going to give us the money back if we lose that case? There's always an issue about over-recovery at the wholesale level. It's whether there's a settlement, there's adequate notice issues. There's always an issue. Maybe it's at the margin. Maybe it's small. But that's why we think FERC, to have a presumption of no refunds in these cases, is right. And, yes, people can rebut that, but there's a presumption, and it's rational.
Let me ask you, in our first decision, back in 1999, Judge Ginsburg wrote that although the commission doesn't explain what it thinks follows from a distinction between arm's length and affiliated purchases, its position seems to be that because the energy system may be viewed as a single seller at retail, the commission need not regulate antecedent wholesale transactions among the operating companies. If that is its point, we reject it out of hand. Now, that's the position of this court from the beginning of this case. So the notion that energy is viewed as a whole and that's the end of the case just isn't consistent with our precedent.
The issue that the court addressed was the unjust and unreasonable rates.
Yep.
And, of course, this court has always treated the operating companies as an affiliated arrangement where the allocations have to be just and reasonable. When you turn to refunds, think about the incentives. Over-recovery, violation of the filed rate, that falls away. Petitioners said very energetically, they overcharge. But in a cost allocation case, somebody's always overcharged. That's why the case comes up, and it's a customer versus customer dispute.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for petitioner.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to make 2 points. First, Judge Williams, I may not have made this clear in the briefs. All of the holding company cases we decided, the holding company had no over-recovery. The holding company could not have an over-recovery in any of those cases, yet refunds were made in every case. The one case they rely on, 25 years old, is Southern Company. You can read Southern Company. The FERC did not hold the rate unjust and unreasonable. Southern filed a new rate. FERC said, well, you haven't justified it on this record. And they said, so we're not going to grant refunds. They also pointed out that the differences were very minor. All the other cases where there has been a finding of unjust and unreasonable, they have granted refunds. And I might also point out that as long as the holding company won't undercollect at retail, which is retail is the place where they could undercollect, the Senate committee said there's no equitable reason not to grant refunds. In other words, if they collect the same amount, which is zero, then the Senate committee says the equitable reason vanishes. Well, the equitable reason has vanished. Second point, there was a bunch of discussion about peak shaving by an operating company. This is an after-the-fact cost allocation. The ratepayers who peak shave do not see this rate. The ratepayers who peak shave have interruptible tariffs at retail.
And they take advantage of interruptions. That then results in a demand of the operating company. The operating company has zero control over that, except through retail rates. At that point, the operating company cannot shave. And as a matter of fact, all that's being done is a button is being pushed and a bill pops out. Now, this is very important. Energy routinely rebills. Energy routinely has surcharges, routinely has refunds. Energy recently had a surcharge and a refund for 15 years of errors. Energy does this all the time. In this case, Energy went to the FERC when the FERC finally ruled it was unjust and unreasonable, said, hey, we're filing for rehearing. Delay putting in the tariff, and we can make refunds. No one will be hurt. Finally, the FERC denied refunds. Energy went in, changed the factors, pushed a button. Out came a new bill. The costs went back and forth among the companies. No operating decision was affected. Energy certainly had represented no operating decision would be affected. Then we had the delay. Judge Rogers and Judge Ginsburg and I forget who else was on the panel ruled that the delay was illegal. Okay, they have to grant a refund for that. Push a button. The costs go back and forth. No operating decision is in the most remote way affected. This is cooked up out of whole cloth. And there's nothing in the record that would support it. It was rebutted with expert testimony. Nobody responded. That completes
my
argument.
We will take the case under advisement and take a brief recess.